Okay. So state your name for the record.
Good morning, Your Honors. Jeffrey Lawrence, attorney for plaintiffs. Appellants. May it please the court. Your Honors, we're here today because the defendants released a defective product into the market that clearly had false and misleading advertising on the packaging. In the initial complaint, plaintiffs alleged specifically that the packaging indicated it was a multiplayer game and that it offered cooperative play gameplay for 2 to 16 players. However, at the time of its release, that was not possible. In a proposed First Amended complaint, which was also considered by the district court, the plaintiffs further alleged specifically that the packaging stated that it was, quote, featuring a Grand Theft Auto Online game prominently displayed in the middle of the packaging with larger text than any other portion of the packaging.
Can we focus a little bit on the disclaimer, because that seems to be the focus of this case? And you make the argument, and I think it's probably a good one, that the disclaimer wasn't accurate because it suggested that at least at some point for some people, some features would be available where realistically, at least for some limited period of time, no feature was available to anybody. So let me assume for the moment that that's a misleading statement. I'm having more trouble, and I read the First Amended complaint too, figuring out how your clients can allege reliance on it. You get a disclaimer that says, in effect, this product may not work for some folks. And your clients say, well, I rely, that false statement, because the true statement would have been it won't work for anybody. That false statement led me, in reliance on that false statement, I bought it. Tell me how you can allege reliance here.
Well, Your Honor,
the judge never got to that because he thought there wasn't a false statement, and maybe we just ought to let him sort that out. But I think it's him in this case. Tell me how can you rely on a statement that says this product may not work?
Well, with all due respect, I don't believe that's what the disclaimer says.
Well, we know exactly what it says. We can read it. It says all features may not be available for all users.
Right. And my argument in the briefs was that it turns on the second word, all. It may not be available to all users necessarily implies that it is available to some users.
Right. But how would your clients in buying it, what reason did they have to think that they would be among the favored class?
I'm sorry, that they would
be among the favored class of people who could use it. Why, when buying it, didn't they know that they might well be among the some users who couldn't use it?
Well, my argument is this. That disclaimer is intended once the online gameplay has become available. The reason I say that is because the disclaimer ends with the following, that you must give 30 days notice to terminate online availability. So the disclaimer doesn't even kick in until the online gameplay is available. And what it's designed for is not to disclaim periods of non-operation, of planned non-operation by the software company, but to cover periods where the networks are having issues, such as the PlayStation Network and the Xbox Live Network, which are not operated by the software company. But here we have the software company not providing the software to make the online gameplay available, yet the packaging...
For 2 weeks.
For the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, right.
Which was crucial to their sales, and they did, I think, $3 billion in the first 3 days. It was the fastest selling game ever. And that's because of the timing of the release of the new game systems, which it would not be playable on.
How were your clients, I mean, I understand your clients were injured because they couldn't play for 2 weeks, but how were they monetarily injured?
Well, the argument is this, that had they known that they wouldn't be able to play that for 2 weeks, and as it came out, you weren't really able to play it for an additional 2 weeks because it wasn't working properly, by that time, there would be no reason to invest money in the game.
Why? Why not just wait 2 weeks to buy it?
Because the game wouldn't have much play value due to the fact that our plaintiffs were intensive gamers who were planning on buying the new next-generation systems, which were due 2 months from after this was released. So the closer you get to that release date of the new systems, the less likely people are to buy it because it's not going to have that replayability because all your companions are going to be having the new system.
And I understand the district judge didn't go off on damages. I'm not a gamer, so I'm sort of curious as to why waiting 2 weeks is a damage.
Are you saying your damages are contingent upon the fact of a third party issuing new gaming systems?
I'm saying that the damages are contingent on the fact that they weren't able to access all features of the game at the time they bought it, and that had that been made clear to them, they may very likely have not chosen to purchase it in the first place.
And so you're seeking a refund?
A refund or some type of compensation. I know that the defendants essentially tried to appease gamers by giving them online money in the game, because there was a problem. They acknowledged that, I think. And that doesn't cure this case.
And did your client seek a refund?
As I alleged, I think, in the or plaintiffs alleged in the first amended complaint, they couldn't seek a refund, because when you try to get a refund for a game,
No, I'm not talking about you didn't sue the retailer. You sued the manufacturer here. Did you seek a refund?
They did not contact the manufacturer and seek a refund. The normal means would be to return it to the store, and the stores will not return games. They will only exchange them for the same game, which would be
pointless. I understand all that, but they never sought any of that, and they didn't sue the retailer.
Yeah, with the knowledge of what would happen, they felt it was futile to attempt to return it.
And so what are the precise damages you're seeking in this lawsuit?
Would be some type of, I guess, the way they would normally handle it would be give a discount on a future game, or give a refund for people who can show that they bought it during the first 2 weeks of gameplay, if they demand it and they return their game. But if they don't return their game, then I think future discount towards future purchase from Rockstar would be appropriate.
So this is a proposed class action?
Yes.
And the class would consist of?
Purchasers of Grand Theft Auto 5 video game within the first 2 weeks of its release, I think September 17th, 2013 to October 1st. The online gameplay wasn't available till October 1st.
I take it the district judge never got to the class issues because it dismissed your complaint?
Correct.
Without leave to amend, right?
Correct.
But you had submitted a proposed amended complaint, correct?
Correct.
And so the judge said that one didn't cure the problem that he identified, which was that there was no misrepresentation.
Correct.
She, I'm sorry. I go back and forth on Phillips. There's another one, isn't there? Aren't there two Phillips?
The main thing I think we added in the first amended was the prominence of featuring GTA Online in the middle of the packaging.
Right.
Because her ruling initially was that we didn't have specified a false or misleading statement, but she addressed that, and she didn't think that was false or misleading. I humbly disagree. I think that is the most prominent advertising on the package, that the disclaimer down in far smaller language is
the whole point is that you wanted it to be online so you could play with other people, and right? Isn't that the whole point of this particular game?
Well, there actually is a single-player game you can play by yourself at home, and that's all you could do for the first 2 weeks, and that's my argument, is that the defendants came with the expectation they would play it online because that's all they do. Similar to like the Call of Duty games, they do have a single player feature, but most people purchase it to play online against their friends, and that's the argument here.
Does anybody have any other questions?
Your amended complaint, you don't seek to amend it beyond what you proffered would be your first amended complaint?
Well, we could. Probably the first amended was submitted before the district court gave a ruling, so there certainly could be some more fine-tuning. But the other thing I wanted to address that goes along with that is my request for judicial notice. For example, I gave packaging of other Grand Theft Auto video games to demonstrate that the packaging on Grand Theft Auto 5 is very different and that it features this online gameplay when none of the other packaging features.
But how does that go to a motion to dismiss? I mean, either your complaint stated a claim or it didn't. It doesn't really matter what the evidence of what other people did was. That's a summary judgment issue. The judge may have erred in granting the motion to dismiss, but I don't see why we should consider other evidence in figuring out whether a complaint is facially sufficient.
Well, I guess I thought it would help assist the prior fact.
Well, we're not trying. She wasn't a trier of fact, and nor are we. This is a legal question, isn't it?
Well, you could attach them to your complaint, actually, if you wanted to incorporate them into your complaint.
Right.
But I want to go back to Judge Rice's question, if I may, for a second. The judge didn't formally offer you an opportunity to amend, but you had proposed an amended complaint, and I think she said that wouldn't solve the problem. She said it's futile.
Right.
So you're not contending that she erred in denying you the right to file one, more that she erred in concluding that the one that you proposed wasn't sufficient, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Oh, I see I have a little bit of time. If there's no more questions, I'd like to reserve it for rebuttal.
Okay, why don't you do that?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Michael Lynch, and I'm an attorney at Kelly Dry & Warren, and we represent the defendant appellees. I'm accompanied here today by my partner, Lee Brenner, as well. I'd like to start just very quickly on the standard of review for a moment, because I think it's an important concept in this case. The dismissal of the original filed complaint, which we refer to in our brief as the operative complaint, is obviously reviewed under a de novo standard. The decision to not allow the amendment on the grounds that it was futile is a different standard, and we think it's important in this case.
Is it a different standard in this case? After all, what the judge said, to give her credit, is I don't think you've alleged anything misleading, and your amended complaint doesn't allege anything misleading. And so it's a legal conclusion, isn't it?
So, no, and I think that one of the reasons
actually, I would think it's a factual conclusion, which you shouldn't be making, whether it's misleading or not.
With respect to the...
Yeah, she may have been wrong in her conclusion, but she didn't, she wasn't saying, well, I exercise my discretion not to let you file an amended complaint. She said, it says the same thing as the first one with respect to this issue, and I don't think that's enough.
Well, in fact, if you look at the complaints, I don't think that's accurate. I don't think that's true. The original complaint contained no detail, contained no statement that they alleged was false. There's no specific allegation as to what or when or how it was false.
Well, let me put it this way. Here's why I'm having difficulty with your problem, with your argument. If you're telling me she exercised her discretion not to let them file a first amended complaint with more detail, I would find that an abuse of discretion. After all, we've said many times that when you dismiss a complaint for absence of detail, you should give the other side the opportunity to suggest an amended one. So, I'm having, even if I buy your premise, which I'm having difficulty with, I don't think you get anywhere with it, respectfully.
And I'll move on, but I'll just point out that the judge did, in fact, give them a chance. She considered the amended complaint.
Sure.
The amended complaint. And for I think somewhat different reasons, denied that motion as being futile.
Well, there's a statement on your package, your client's package.
Yes.
And I paraphrased it before, so I won't paraphrase it again because I'll get it wrong. But that statement to me suggests that some people who buy this may not have access to some of the features. The truth was that all people who bought it would not have access to one of the features, correct?
Your second statement is true. I would take issue with your first.
Well, the first one, it says what it says. You neither of you will accept my characterization of it, so I could read it to you, but I won't do that. Why isn't that second statement that you agree with false?
I'm sorry.
To the extent it says that. Well, just use the second statement. Isn't it true that this feature was available to no purchaser?
Correct.
And
for 2 weeks.
Okay. If we find that the disclaimer represents that it will be available to some, isn't that a misstatement?
No. The statement, and I'll read it.
We can read it, and we all have it in front of us.
So, yeah. Access to special features may require internet connection, which this one would. It also says it may not be available to all users.
May not be available to all users. The truth is it was not available to any user, correct?
So I don't think it says that and
well, no, you just don't ask me. Here's what it says. You read it. It may not be available to all users, correct?
Correct.
Isn't the corollary of that is that it will be available to some users?
We submit that would not be a reasonable inference to make. And the court, in fact, below, Judge Phillips did find that there was not reasonable reliance in this case, and that's an issue that the defendant...
Well, but her reasonable reliance finding was based on the fact that she thought there was no misstatement, and therefore there couldn't have been reasonable reliance. She didn't parse it as to the second issue, did she?
As to whether this is
as to if it's a false statement, she didn't say, and even if it were false, you didn't rely
on. Well, I think implicit in her ruling is it also, and actually explicit in her ruling is it, not only that is it not false, but it's not misleading.
That's correct. And if I think that's wrong, for purposes of discussion, she didn't then separately analyze whether or not if it was misleading, there was reasonable reliance on
it. She did not address
it. She just simply said, because it's not false or misleading, you couldn't have, you didn't rely on it to your detriment. Correct?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So let's get back. Why do you think this statement is not misleading?
Why do I think the statement is not misleading?
Yeah. To me, when I read it, let me tell you, I know nothing about online gaming. But when I read it, it suggests to me that at least some users will have access to the features. You may not be among the chosen few, but that some users will have them. And the truth is that no users had access to those features, at least for some period of time.
Well, and so let's be clear. This is, and Your Honor asked a question earlier about the distinction between a single-player game and the online version. This online aspect, at the time the game was released, was only a small portion of what this game was about. The game itself and the prior iterations of this game were the games that are played on the console in a single-player mode on your video game, on your own personal video game console and on your TV. It's the online version was something that hadn't been released in this game series before. There had been minor aspects of the Grand Theft Auto 4 game that had it, but it was a new feature, and it is for, as plaintiffs have attempted to put in some evidence on this front, they are experienced gamers. They understand what these packages mean. They understand, what is out in the marketplace. I would also, just on the point of whether this statement is misleading, it requires an inference that our position is it's not a reasonable inference to assume that it means some people would have had access.
So you think when you buy this package, you should be on notice that no one may have access to the online feature?
But there are times that you may not have access to
it. No one will.
Yes. I don't think it says anything contrary to that. I don't think there's an inference that could be made to that. Now, let me then address a separate issue then, Your Honor. If to the extent that this is in the our supplemental record, to the extent this assists you in your decision making, the court below, we had made a motion to submit evidence outside the four corners of the complaint. The two first exhibits are the two that she accepted, and those are the actual game packages for obvious reasons.
Because they were described in the complaint.
Exactly. The rest of the exhibits that we attach, which are part of our supplemental record, were inadmissible. She ruled she didn't need to look at them because she felt the packaging was clear enough. To the extent that you have a question on the packaging, we have evidence in the record that establishes that the game company, the defendants, were quite clear with the public for a long period of time that the online version was the online aspect, which is a single aspect of this game, which is a complex game. It's a single aspect, a free element of the game, in fact, was not going to be available for the 2 weeks.
But isn't that a summary judgment issue?
Yeah, so that doesn't. We cannot look at that, especially now when for the first time on appeal, when the district court didn't even consider it in issuing her ruling. We have to look at what she ruled and what the rationale for how she ruled, limited to the four corners of the complaint and what was attached to that.
And so. I don't believe it's a summary judgment issue because these are not hearsay statements.
Well,
these are statements that are being admitted.
But we're dealing with the facial sufficiency of the complaint. These are matters of defense. So if somebody says, I lied to Judge Wardlaw yesterday when I said something in open court, and somebody says, well, wait, I have the transcript, it wasn't a lie. That doesn't have to deal with the complaint. It deals with your defense. Well, you never filed an answer.
So it's not offered for the truth of the statements.
I know. Well, I'm not arguing about whether they're here.
And perhaps to your point, Your Honor, what it would require then would be if you found that this was a misleading statement and actionable, which I think are two different things as well here, it could be that you would instruct Judge Phillips to consider.
No, all we're looking at is whether or not she should have allowed the filing of the First Amendment complaint and whether or not she was given the allegations in the complaint, whether they were sufficient to make out a claim that the representation was misleading, not a determination whether it was actually misleading, but whether the complaint states a claim that it was misleading.
The complaint may be frivolous. We don't know. But that's not – that's factually frivolous. The question is whether it's legally sufficient on its face.
So she decided she didn't need to look at those exhibits. I can deal with that below.
That's sort of the problem I'm having with this ruling that she did. She actually looked at the thing and concluded that – or made a finding that it wasn't misleading. And I don't think that's what she should do necessarily on a 12b6 motion to dismiss. You're supposed to look at the allegations in the complaint and viewing them in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, determine whether or not they've stated a claim.
It could be not
a very good claim, or a claim not worth very much money.
And so I think what Judge Phillips did below, Your Honor, is that she was asked to look, and the amended complaint urged her to consider whether the packaging said this option in the game would be immediately available. The term immediately is peppered throughout the proposed amended complaint. And her ruling was simply that that's not what it says. It doesn't say it would be immediately available, and it would be unreasonable for you to rely upon that based on what the packaging actually says. And so, you know,
and we review that. We review that ruling de novo, do we not?
Not correct. And that is a finding of. I think that's as a matter of law that she found that.
Right, because it can't be a finding of fact. It's a motion to dismiss. Could you address the reliance? Let's assume that this statement is misleading. Could you address the reliance issue? I know the judge didn't, because you said it wasn't misleading. Therefore, you couldn't have relied. Can you respond to their reliance theory? I'm having some difficulty in this case figuring out, even if it's taken at face value, why anybody should assume that the online gaming would be available to them as opposed to somebody else during the first 2 weeks.
I think that's a very valid question. And the issue then, you know, when for someone who's experienced with these games and to understand what these labels mean and what the packaging says, I think the key question is it reasonable to rely upon something that you understand relies upon an internet connection, relies upon a lot of other aspects? It's not always available, and that's a fact. So for the plaintiffs to come in and take the position that this was clear on its face, that this was immediately available to them, is an unreasonable conclusion for them to rely upon. Beyond that, I think the issue you pointed out as to why they would be in the so-called, as you described it, the favored class, is another very good question. Why is it that, to the extent that some people would have access to it, why were they reasonable to believe that it would be them? And we submit that the answer is that it's simply not reasonable, and that they haven't, in fact, actually relied. And you know, that's a conclusion that we don't think they really even appealed on before Your Honor. Now, if I could move on for a moment to some of the economic injury points that Your Honor raised, I'd like to do that. You know, below, the court relied upon the Kwikset decision to determine whether there was an economic injury, and that's the proper standard, but I think that we submit that there are facts in that case that make it very different from the facts in this case. The Kwikset case, the plaintiff had purchased a lock that said it was made in the USA, and that turned out to be demonstrably false. That wasn't a misleading statement, it was a demonstrably false statement that, in fact, the lock wasn't made in the United States. The plaintiffs came before the court. I see that I'm running out of time, so I'll try to pick it up. They came before the court and asked for a refund because they didn't want a lock that wasn't made in the United States. That's an economic injury. That's a logical economic injury. We have a far different scenario here. We don't have plaintiffs who are saying they don't want this game. They've never said that. In fact, what they're saying is they wanted it, but they just wanted to have full access to everything for those 2 weeks. That's an expectation damage. That is not economic damages. And that is not sufficient for their claims under the UCL or the FAL.
Aren't they saying they wouldn't have bought it if they knew that they wouldn't have online access for 2 weeks? And then I heard him say something today about, and then there was an additional 2 weeks where it ended up not being available.
Yeah, we can test that the second 2 weeks weren't available. Our position, and we think it was conceded below, actually, and we think it's a fact that it was available after 2 weeks. This is an argument that I'm not familiar with, and it's not one that the plaintiffs raised below.
But counsel, in their complaint, they asked for a refund, and so we have to take that on face value. And if they ask for a refund, now I agree, maybe we get down to summary judgment and you can prove that not only did they keep the game, but they've used it for the last 3 years.
Correct.
For 25,000 hours, and they didn't want a refund. They've used it fully. And you may develop that in depositions and bring that on summary judgment and show that they didn't justifiably rely and they did not seek a refund. But we're on a motion to dismiss.
And so what they're asking, if you listen, is some kind of, the words counsel just used a moment ago, was seeking a refund or some kind of compensation. And that was described as a discount on a future game. This is a speculative theory of damages, and it's not clear to me. They've never come in and said, we don't want the game. We'd never want the game because of those 2 weeks.
Well, they said the word refund, and that's the magic word. I agree with you that they're not going to get expectation damages or incremental reduction in a future game. But if they said, I want a refund, I've never used the game, it's sat on my shelf for the last 3 years, you can have it back. They've stated a cause of action under their complaint.
Not a cause of action. They've arguably raised an economic injury, but I still don't think they've stated a cause of action just by that statement alone. However, I would submit that what they've said is a little bit different from I want a refund. What they've said is I wasn't happy with this game, and I didn't have use of this game, and that's the In Re Sony Gaming case, and that's exactly what that case speaks to. That case... It says to maintain an established standing under the UCL and FAL, the plaintiff must establish a loss or deprivation of money or property sufficient to qualify as an injury in fact, quote-unquote, economic injury, and to show that it was the result, that injury was the result of the false advertising. What they're saying here is that they didn't have full access to this game for a two-week period. That's their complaint. That's not a refund, and what they're looking for is to be compensated for that two-week time period.
All right. Thank you very much.
Your Honor, if I may just conclude very quickly. There was, and I don't know that this necessarily needs to be said, there was another motion that the plaintiffs put before you to add, ask you to take judicial notice of a whole series of documents, and we submit that was both improperly filed and wasn't in accordance with your rules. But beyond that, it's not clear what these documents are intended to do. At least from my perspective, they appear largely irrelevant. These are, in fact, hearsay. They appear to be offered for the truth of the matter asserted therein.
Can you tell me what the documents are?
The documents are essentially a series of press coverage about the...
Press coverage. Okay. Well, yeah. I don't see that that's relevant to what we have to decide with respect to whether the complaint states a claim.
We agree.
Right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
You had some time left, Mr. Lawrence. Okay. I don't think so. All right. McMahon and Bankston versus Take-Two Interactive Software is submitted.